no penalties here. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast with Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, and Dave Manute.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Manuk, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Comprehensive Winnipeg Jets discussion and analysis for you on this Saturday morning. Nice to see you, gentlemen. Dave, nice to see the fire is still going hot behind you. Ezzy, nice to see that you're still an ungroomed beast.
Yeah, nice to see you, Drew, as well. Nice to see you, Dave. Hopefully you had a nice little anniversary on Thursday night with your wife, Laura. We had a great post-game show. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, the Jets weren't able to pick up the win, but we soldiered on without you. So, we have a nice little game to talk about tonight, boys. And, heading into this one, there might be some more fireworks coming up between these two teams after what happened between Lowry and Galchenyuk and Thornton and Matty Perreault.
And Wayne Simmonds and Pierre-Luc Dubois, certainly with some heated comments yesterday, certainly some heated action on the ice throughout the game on Thursday night, Mr. Manuk, almost as hot as I'd say you are with that fire roaring behind you there, buddy.
Thank you, Drew. Good to have you back. You know, I learned how difficult the hosting duties are in this new era. I generally do not host very often. Back in the day when we were on radio, every once in a blue moon, if you were gone, as he would usually host, but if both of you were gone, then I had the hosting responsibilities. A little different here.
Hard. Drew makes it seem like it's so hard.
No, you know what? It's funny. But for the couple of things that we were supposed to, the 30-second thing, the ad sponsors, I found them after the show. So Ezzy and I, when we were doing our wrap-up show, which we constantly do, after every post-game show.
That, by the way, is not broadcast because nobody wants to watch
hot,
that.
Too hot for TV.
That's right. It's like Jerry Springer, too hot for TV, if you remember back.
It's the real Illegal Curve.
But afterwards, I was like, I said to Ez, I'm like, oh, I wonder what this does. And then it'd play the 30-second commercial. I'm like, oh, I guess I should have used that during the broadcast. So we soldiered on. We got it done. But good to have you back. Good to have you back in your spot, hosting, Drew.
And it is a pleasure to be back here. As I tweeted just a few minutes ago, I haven't been on for a week. And given the ridiculous schedule this season has been, and the games usually every second night, a week without broadcasting feels like about 6 months worth. So I'm excited to get into it this morning. I'm excited to get into it later on tonight with the post-game show. And then, of course, back to normal next week with the post-game shows. They play Monday, Wednesday, Friday, the Jets do next week. So a lot of fun ahead for all of us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I must say good morning to everybody who's joining us in the chat. So nice to see so many of you. Some new faces, some familiar faces. It's great to see all of you here this Saturday morning, and then of course later on tonight for the post game show. But we get started with the Jets and the Leafs, of course, and what I think is finally developing into, I'm going to call it a little bit of a war of words between these two teams. It sort of started, obviously, with the ferocity, I just say, associated with Thursday night's game. A lot of questionable hits delivered by the Toronto Maple Leafs against some Winnipeg Jets players, some unsuspecting Winnipeg Jets players, certainly. And it spilled over into some of the comments yesterday with questions about, are the Leafs a dirty team? And then, Wayne Simmonds firing back and saying, the Jets still are just trying to, the Jets have been trying to run the Leafs out of the building every time they play them. So finally, a little bit of hatred, I'd say, between these two teams after what a year, a year that I thought was going to have more hate because you only played the same teams over and over and over again. It's finally materialized with 10 games left to go in the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that on a Legal Curve, we love to be fueled by hate. But yeah, I love this type of stuff, guys. And, I realize because of the circumstances of Thursday night's game and what happened, there's a lot of talk about, whether the Leafs are a dirty team or not. And, it makes you think back to the, 2012, 2013, 14 Leafs when they had Colton Orr and Fraser McLaren, the good old Randy Carlyle days, right, Dave? So, are the Leafs a dirty team? Like, maybe they have a few players that play on the edge. I don't necessarily think they're a dirty team, but you look at what happened in that game. And Dave and I talked about it on Thursday night's post-game show. I still don't understand how Alex Galchenyuk doesn't get a penalty on that play. And it's funny because Joe Thornton is the one that was fined, right? And that hit wasn't good. Don't get me wrong, guys. But I don't understand how, if Thornton is fined for that, like, we've always talked about the NHL Department of Player Safety and the inconsistency and everything like that. And we don't have to get into that. But I thought at the very least, Galchenyuk was going to get a fine. Now, in terms of, you know, what was happening, you know, with Nick Foligno and Josh Morrissey, and then Pierre-Luc Dubois came in, it's pretty funny, guys, right? Because they were just teammates not too long ago in Columbus. And now Foligno and Dubois are, you know, battling it out for top spot in the North Division, right? So, yeah, there's no doubt that, and Zach Hyman's obviously out of the lineup now, boys, but I mean, he's a guy that we know can mix it up, but nobody's going to call Hyman a dirty player. I mean, I've watched Hyman, you know, just as much as you guys have. He's a guy that plays hard. He's not a dirty player. I mean, I wouldn't call any of these players. I mean, are you going to call Joe Thornton a dirty player? I mean, one of the best playmakers in NHL history. So is Wayne Simmonds a guy that plays on the edge? Yes, but I don't care what anybody says. Wayne Simmonds is not a dirty player.
No, you know, there's a difference between, you know, I mean, I don't even think that Wayne Simmonds plays on the edge. Wayne Simmonds is
he plays a physical game and he can drop the glove. Game. That's what I meant by, you know, kind of playing on the edge, Drew.
Yeah. No, a guy who plays on the edge and, you know, who, you know, certainly could be, nobody would argue if you said he's dirty, is Tom Wilson. I look at this Leafs team and
Tom Wilson is a dirty player.
Yeah, you know, Brad Marchand, less so now that he's sort of begun to control himself, used to be a dirty player. I mean, he still has that bit of that in him, you know, come playoff time and when things really get heated up. But the, from my perspective, the idea that the Leafs are a dirty team, I didn't quite understand where that was coming from. You know, they beat up the Jets on Thursday night a little bit. And frankly, you know, the Leafs needed to do that to the Jets for their own psyche, given the Jets had beaten up the Leafs pretty well this year on the scoreboard and in some physical instances during the game. But to me, the biggest concern, not the Leafs' play, is the Jets' lack of a response, I thought, to some of the Leafs' physicality is what left me wondering about the team. I mean, at no point in time have I ever sat back and thought, you know, Sheldon Keefe and the Toronto Maple Leafs, boy, they're playing a really dirty style. I didn't understand the impetus to the question. You know, it's just a coincidence, I think, that, you know, the last time the Jets and the Leafs played, Hyman got that, you know, that high stick, which was not a good high stick, obviously. That was a bad sort of hack down on Neil Pionk. But nobody thinks, to your point, Ezzy, that Zach Hyman's a dirty player or that Wayne Simmonds is a dirty player. I mean, physical, maybe. Physical, yes. Not dirty. Dave?
Well, no, I mean, and I think you're asking the question, but I mean, the truth is that's just a narrative. And someone asked the question and they asked it in a manner that makes it sound like there's dirty players versus is this just a physical series that's ramping up after you've played each other eight times? Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the narrative that makes a lot more sense to me, is that you have two teams that, now, will this carry over if the NHL goes back to the regular thing? Then no, it won't, because again, guys change teams all the time, and if you're only playing the Leafs twice a year, then you're not going to have any sustainability to this. But for right now, you will, and at this point in the season, you're sick of, like, look, we talk about it all the time, and you've seen these teams, you've seen one team eight times, you've seen another team seven times. It's a lot, you know, and playing these same teams over and over and over again, it gets a bit repetitive. So you start to develop that, you know, that dislike, that disdain for each other. And again, like I said, I don't look at this team as a particularly dirty team. I mean, again, the Galchenyuk hit, I thought was just, I just don't think he was paying attention.
And
the other thing also was that Adam Lowry was in a bit of a vulnerable position, right? Because he was not normally his upright self. He was kind of down, like, you know, kind of almost head height for Galchenyuk, but not for himself. And so the point is that, again, I just thought it was a physical game, and we've talked about this. The Jets team is not the 2017-18 Dustin Byfuglien, Ben Chiarot, you know, Jacob Trouba. Like, this isn't that team. They just don't have that physical brand of player to the same degree that they used to. And so you have to adapt. And again, you don't back down. You don't let these guys come in and impose their will. And I think what this has set itself up to be honest with you, is a bit of a game of a battle of attrition tonight. I think it set itself up for that, probably because of this. Like, it's funny, right? Like, maybe the players weren't necessarily thinking it, but now you have these questions posed to them. They answer the questions. The questions get answered on the other side, you know, obviously asked by the same guys, asked to these guys as well. The war of words starts. they can. And again, we talk about this all the time. Guys can say they don't pay attention to what's going on, but guys pay attention to what's going on.
Yeah.
And guys are on, guys turn on TSN, they turn on Sportsnet. And what do you think is leading every, I mean, look, go to illegalcurve.com, read the morning papers. You can see like, and I'll read you some of the headlines. Like everyone, especially the video ones, are all about this whole idea of, here, these are the headlines. Intensity levels on the rise between Jets and the Maple Leafs. Bad blood brewing between Maple Leafs, Jets atop North Division. Are the Maple Leafs a dirty team? About Sarah. Sarah Orleski shares how Jets fans view the rivalry with the Leafs. So that's not necessarily so much about the intensity. But the point is, that's the kind of the narrative that's been created since the last game, which again, to your point, was a physical one. So I think it'll just be interesting to see. I think it's almost going to become a self-fulfilling prophecy tonight, sure, where that's what happens.
Well, because especially these two teams, this is the final. I mean, they have one more game, and that's on Friday, May the 14th. Mm-hmm. I'll be shocked if that game means anything. And if either of these two teams, are really playing for anything to speak of during that game, I think everything's going to be settled by then. So I think this is the last, what I'll call, opportunity tonight to make a statement. Both teams, and I think the Jets, I mean, clearly the Leafs are the best team in the North Division. And I bet you the Leafs, if you injected them with serum, truth serum, would say the Jets are the second best team in the North Division. So I think these two teams are on a bit of a collision course if everything else, plays out to fruition, to meet each other for the North Division championship when the playoffs begin. So I think that is also fueling the dislike, the physicality, and the desire to make a statement, be it for the Leafs making a statement on Thursday and now to see what the Jets' response will be when they play each other tonight. That leads us seamlessly, all this discussion, into our illegal curve question of the day. It's now ticking on the bottom of the screen for those of you joining us on our social media platforms. Want to hear from you on this topic with all the discussion about the Leafs and whether or not they are a quote-unquote dirty team. Are the Jets themselves tough enough, edgy enough, for playoff hockey? Ezzy, I start with you with that question on this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, and I understand it's a valid question. And by the way, I agree with Dave that at this point, it's just a narrative. And you make a good point, Drew. Like, we're getting closer to the playoffs, right, guys? Like, what are we, 3 weeks away from the playoffs? The Jets have 10 games left. Of course, these games are going to get a lot chippier. And I agree with Drew. I think, by the time we get down to, three, four games left in the season, maybe even five games, six games left in the season, I mean, these playoff spots might be solidified, right? You might have the Jets and the Oilers jockeying for position second and third, but it doesn't matter, as we know, because they're going to play each other second versus third, right? So I agree with you on that, Drew. But, this question is tough to quantify. Like, how do you quantify that? Are you going to take all of the Jets players and kind of give them like a toughness rating? Like, you know what I mean, Drew? Like, I agree with Dave. Like, this Jets team is not, like, you're not going to have Buff in the playoffs taking two guys by the shoulders and wringing their necks. Like, so this is a much different team. Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor. I mean, these types of guys are not physical players. Do I think they're tough enough for the playoffs? By your definition of tough, not yours, Drew. I mean, by,
the general
unwritten rule of toughness. Yeah, of course I do. Like, I don't look at this Jets team. And it's funny how we're only talking about this, 46 games into the season, right, Dave? Like, this hasn't been a narrative at all, but you have, the Leafs going out there and throwing some body checks, and, some high hits. And then all of a sudden, the Jets aren't tough enough. But, we could go up and down the roster, and obviously, Adam Lowry's doubtful for tonight, but, Nate Thompson can handle himself. Logan Stanley can handle himself. Tucker Poolman can handle himself. Like, and I'm not just talking about fighting. Like, I'm talking about, physicality. Yeah. Matthew Perreault, we know he's a small player, but he can throw his weight around. He can get in on the forecheck and lay a good body check every once in a while. But yeah, I guess if you matched up the Jets' toughest players or the most physical players against, teams like Toronto, Montreal, Calgary. And, another point to make, boys, the next couple of games after this against the Oilers, you don't think those games are going to be hotly contested? You don't think we're going to see some physicality? I mean, we know a guy like Zach Cassian, Josh Archibald, Ethan Bear plays a physical game. Like, they have guys, you don't think they're going to be mixing it up and trying to get under the Jets' skin? It's like Drew said, we're getting closer and closer to the playoffs, so the games start to get a little bit chippier. That's all that happens. They get tighter. There's less space. I don't – put it this way, Drew. I don't worry about the Jets' lack of physicality at all, and whether that or not that's going to, you know, determine whether they win a playoff series or win two playoff series. Because I think at the end of the day, it's going to come down to goaltending. It's going to come down to special teams. It's going to come down to scoring depth. We know you have to have four scoring lines going, health, right, Dave? So, you know, to me, it's not an issue.
Yeah, you know, and you know, typically, Ezzy, I would agree with you, or usually I would agree with you that the Jets didn't need to add any toughness or they didn't need to add any physicality. But, you know, I'm just trying to think back to, you know, this season. And you know, I look at teams like Tampa Bay with what they did at the trade deadline last year. You can't put goons on the ice. You can't put, you know, slugs on the ice who can't contribute in any other way aside from, you know, occasionally dropping the gloves. That's not what I'm advocating for. But you watch this Jets team, and I don't know that they are tough enough to play against, that they can impose some of their physical will on their opponent. I'm not saying you put out pylons who get skated around occasionally will drop the gloves. That's not what I'm advocating for. I just don't know if the Jets make it tough enough on their opponent to play against. And, you know, whatever you think about the Leafs, and I mean, I think that it, you know, all this, you know, character on their team is overrated, and I think they've, you know, gone a little bit ridiculous with that. You know, a guy like Wayne Simmonds, you know, who's not hugely impactful anymore, you know, is hard to play against. You look back to, you know, Tampa Bay last year, what they did at the Stanley, before the trade deadline. Who'd they acquire? They acquired Zach Bogosian. Hard to play against. Not great. Not a fantastic player. We know what Zach Bogosian is. He's out of the Leafs lineup for the next month. That was announced yesterday. But Bogosian for Tampa Bay was hard to play against. Barclay Goodrow, hard to play against. Who's the other guy that they got? Blake Coleman from New Jersey, harder to play against. I don't know that the Jets are hard enough to play against come playoff time, Dave.
Well, I mean, and I think that comes back to that idea of attrition, right? You have to pay a price to be in front of the net. And again, we'll see what happens with this Jets team. I mean, I think the most disappointing thing for folks who are watching that game was that they were expecting a response. There was someone who was going to go out there. And I mean, and to be honest with you, we've seen it a lot from Logan Stanley for the most part this season, when someone on this team has been, you know, targeted, whether it's intentionally or unintentionally. And he's been the guy who's stepped up and, you know, handled that area of the bit of business, if you will, for this Jets team. I think your point is a different one, though. I think you're talking about that idea of making it a war zone in front of Connor Hellebuck, making it a pain to be there, not allowing guys to set up shop in front of the Jets goaltender and really allow them to, you know, have control of that space. Like I said, I think it's one of those areas that the Jets, it's not one of their strengths, right? This isn't a team that's going to like physically batter you. And we'll see. I mean, look, that Calgary series in the bubble last year was physical. Now, You lose Mark Scheifele, you lose Patrick Laine and Mason Appleton. Well, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't care what team you are. You're not winning that series when you lose your top center, your top winger, and another important role-playing winger. Mm-hmm. So to me, like, it doesn't really matter what they would have done. But the Flames, you know, beat up on the Jets pretty effectively last year. So, you know, Derek Forbert's a big boy. He can handle himself. Again, like I said, as he and I talked about in the post game, he's probably in a role that's above his pay grade. I think he's probably better suited to being a third pairing guy at this point in his career. And I think what I think is the most important thing for this Winnipeg Jets team is to figure out their identity for this. I mean, again, and that's a buzzword I hate using, but I think this is one of those situations where you've got 10 games left. You need to figure your business out. And that's your defensive pairings. Because again, like I said, you know, Paul Maurice is doing this rotation. He's talking about a rotation, but really the rotation is only with three guys. It's Jordy Benn, it's Logan Stanley, and it's Ville Heinola. And that to me is the biggest question mark, because again, if you don't want to be that physical brand team and you want to be in control of the puck and you want to be a puck possession team, I kind of think Ville Heinola should probably be in your lineup then. Even though he's a young guy, I mean, it kind of helps with puck possession when you have a guy who's smooth skating, can handle a little bit of pressure and get that puck and make a good first pass. So to me, if you're not going to be, you know, if you don't want to be a physically imposing team, and I get that they want Jordy Benn, and I'm not going to castigate Jordy Benn for his first game in a month. I didn't think he played. I mean, as he said it, I think he played 11 minutes in that last game. It was ho hum, but I mean, you know, the game itself was pretty ho hum. And I think I wouldn't say this is what he's capable of doing in one game. And again, we talked about it when they acquired him. He's better on his off wing than he is. The numbers show that he's a better player on his off wing on the right side than he is on the left. So again, I just think, like, if you're going to want physically, I mean, I know that Logan Stanley doesn't have quote experience only in his, you know, third year of pro hockey, but the point is, and especially not in playoff hockey, but the point is that if you want to have a little bit more of that physicality, then maybe you have that. If you want to have puck possession, well, then you put in Ville Heinola. I just think, like, they're
almost like a tweener right now where you're not sure, you know, they're not even sure what they want to be by the way the roster is being deployed in some regard. You know, if you want Logan Stanley in your lineup to be harder to play against, then that's fine. But choose Logan Stanley. Don't try and straddle both sides of the line, because you're not really doing anything at that point in time.
Yeah, and I think, guys, you know, I said this before, but I mean, this narrative has really only popped up recently when the Jets are winning. This doesn't seem to be talked about.
And yeah, exactly.
Don't get me wrong. I realize at times, because the Jets defense is a little bit smaller and maybe less physical than, you know, in previous incarnations of this Jets defense. Like, we talked about it, no Ben Chiarot, no Dustin Byfuglien, you know, no Tyler Myers. I mean, I do think that is an issue at times, but I don't think that's why the Jets lose some of these games, right? Like, the Jets win these games with speed. We know that. I mean, they're an offensive team. I mean, right? Like, the New York Islanders, Dallas Stars, like, those are more defensive-minded teams. The Jets aren't one of those types of teams. So what I'm saying is, you can't manufacture physical players that aren't physical players, right? Like, the Jets are what they are at this point. There's no more trades coming. And so we can debate all day long, you know, if the Jets, you know, it would be nice if the Jets could be more physical and everything like that. But when the Jets go on the offensive and they make it difficult and the other team is on their heels and they dictate the pace, this is how the team wins. I mean, they are going to live and die by getting big time performances from players like Nick Ehlers, Mark Scheifele, Kyle Connor. I mean, I think Pierre-Luc Dubois is a guy, you know, probably up the middle, aside from Adam Lowry, is obviously, you know, the toughest guy to play against. So again, I do think the Jets have players that are tough to play against, but it goes back to what you said before, Drew. I mean, yeah, if you compare the Jets top to bottom with, you know, some of the other quote unquote, you know, contenders in the NHL, yeah, they're maybe not as tough to play against, but going into the playoffs in the first round, I think they have just as good a shot as anybody to come out of this North Division.
Yeah, I agree that they have just as good a shot, but, you know, you just said it yourself, and Dave said it before, and I do agree with you both. If the Jets are at their best when they're a skilled puck-moving team, how is it that Ville Heinola isn't in your lineup at that point in time? I mean,
yeah, but we're beating a dead horse here. Like, we all agree with that. Like, there's no debate here. Like, we all agree. Out of
Ville Heinola. You don't have to be a physical team. Sorry, you don't have to be a physical team. You know, if the puck is in your zone and out of your zone really quick because you're a puck-moving team.
Look at the 2016-17 Pittsburgh Penguins. How many tough players and physical players were on that team? What I remember is Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Jake Guentzel, Brian Rust, Chris Letang. Like, do you see where I'm going with this, guys?
Mm. Yeah. Puck-moving.
Like, the Pittsburgh Penguins were not a like the 2011 Bruins, right? Like, mm-hmm. So not every team that ultimately wins the Stanley Cup has to be the most physical team of the you know, the teams that you play in the playoffs.
But they have to have an identity that defines how they want to play, which was what Dave was saying, which is, if you want to be a puck moving team, if you're not going to win a physical battle in your own zone, playing that game night in and night out, the Jets just aren't built that way.
They still have to win physical battles. It's not a question of whether you win physical battles or not. It's a question in those types of games where they're, let's say they're more physical games, Drew. It's how do you manage that? You obviously, it's hockey's a physical game. You have to, you know, have a response, not necessarily dropping the gloves, but you have to be able to at least try to match the physicality. It doesn't always work. But yeah, I see where you're going with this. I mean, you have to win using what you're best at. And, you know, sometimes when the Jets aren't, like, look at the game against Edmonton, right? Like, that was just a game in which the Jets didn't have anything. There wasn't any, it wasn't even, you know, a physical contest. It was just
last Saturday's game.
Last Saturday's 3-0
loss. It was a walkover.
It was a poor performance. And so I look at this Jets team and I still think, you know, the way they're constructed, again, I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup, I'm just saying, I'm not going into these playoffs here thinking, you know, the Jets are, just because they've lost five games against the Oilers, you know, I don't think they're nervous about it. I'm not that nervous about it either, because I think if they're playing the right way going in, I sound like Paul Maurice here, boys, but if they are playing the right way going into the playoffs and they get the goaltending, because we know the Jets are going to have the edge in goal, I think they can beat the Oilers no problem.
You know, from my perspective, you know, if you're going to lose a physical battle, but the physical battle is happening in the offensive zone, as in the Jets are on the offense, then it's not as big of a deal. The problem is when you're losing physical battles in your defensive zone, and that's what leads to opportunities and scoring chances for the opposition, Dave. That's my perspective, is that, you know, the Jets need to be getting the puck out of their zone as quickly as humanly possible with their best players doing so, and icing the best lineup in order to make that happen. Saturday morning, we're live here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment of the program brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Rumors is champing at the bit to reopen. As soon as they are allowed to do so, as soon as it is safe for them to do so, they're going to be reopened with all of the necessary social distancing rules in place. Don't miss a show. Get on their website, rumorscomedyclub.com. And along those lines, we're pleased to welcome to the program our good friend, the sports editor of the Winnipeg Sun, to continue our discussions about the Winnipeg Jets. Our good buddy, Ted Wyman, joins us in the bottom left of the screen. Teddy, nice to see you, buddy. How are you?
Morning, guys. Great to be here. First time in the new format, and loving the show. And I spent the week growing out my beard just so I'd fit in.
That's good. That's what we like to see, that kind of dedication from all of our guests, you know, to make sure that they match the motif that's going on between Ezzy and myself. And Dave, well, we'll talk about Dave later off air, but when he's not listening.
His head's on fire.
That's true. He's got it more serious issues to deal with.
Ted, when you have to be Ted, when you have to deal with Ezzy and Drew, your head is constantly on fire.
Well, I'd say my hair is on fire, but that ship has sailed a long time ago. Ted, obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets, and you know the conversation over the last 24, 48 hours, give or take, has been about sort of the physicality and the lack of a response, maybe from the Jets on Thursday night to the Leafs' physicality. What were your thoughts on that? You know, is this Jets team physical enough, tough enough come playoff time, or did they maybe get beat up a little bit by the Leafs on Thursday night?
Interesting question. I keep hearing Paul Maurice talk about how it's going to start getting more like the Central Division, because this North Division has been so full of no-hitters this year. And, you know, when are we going to see that exactly, though? It did seem like one team kind of stepped it up in that area, maybe crossed the line a little bit too. Clearly it was not very well received after the game. And certainly the result of the hit on Adam Lowry does not seem all that, doesn't seem good, right? But while there's not a lot of toughness in that lineup, and especially if Lowry's hurt, and we've seen Logan Stanley be the guy that's been stepping up a bit, and here he is out of the lineup. So it's, you know, when you've played no hitters all year, it's going to be hard to turn it around and suddenly start playing that physical game down the stretch here. But I really think they're going to have to, because the playoffs are not going to be as easy as it's been throughout this year in the Canadian division.
You know, Ted, there's a really good chance, obviously, that, you know, Adam Lowry isn't going to play tonight versus the Leafs. And, you know, that will probably mean that, you know, Jansen Harkins comes back into the lineup, obviously, if Lowry is not in there. So you're obviously going to also have, you know, other players moving up the lineup. Andrew Copp, maybe we see, you know, Paul Stastny move back to center. But, you know, with 10 games left here, you know, even though the Jets still have a chance at finishing first, who are one or two players on this Jets team? Could be a forward, could be a defenseman, but I think you will probably go with a forward or two. But who do you think has to step up the most here so that we're confident, you know, that the Jets are, you know, rolling the cliche four lines and they have their defense pairings, you know, clicking? Because to me, it seems like, you know, they're getting the offense from Scheifele, Ehlers, Connor, Andrew Copp is obviously having a breakout season, but it still seems like, you know, in the middle six of this Jets group, they're still not quite where you would like them to be.
Three letters, PLD. You know, honestly, guys, I have been a bit of a harsh critic of Pierre-Luc Dubois. I know that he did have a better physical game this last game, and that is important because that is something, as we just discussed, the Jets are going to need, and they're going to need from him, and particularly if Adam Lowry's out of the lineup, his size in the middle becomes so important. But then again, will he even be in the middle with the way things have been switching around on this team and with injuries? But, the thing about Pierre-Luc Dubois that I have a difficult time with is it's just he doesn't really seem to control the puck for more than a millisecond. You know, it's on his stick and then it rolls off his stick. He's not taking passes very well. He had a chance at a one-timer the other day. He whiffed on the shot. There's just something not right with him. He's just not comfortable. And I'm among those that's willing to look at it and say this has been a very difficult situation for him coming in here. It hasn't been all that, you know, it hasn't been easy. It hasn't worked super well in terms of him fitting in and finding his spot because he's certainly been moved around a lot. And he's had to change teams, and he's the youngest player on the team. But you'd like to see just a little more touch with him, a little more finish, a little more contribution to the offense. Because as you said, Scheifele's been great. Ehlers and Connor have been great. They've been putting it up. But that secondary scoring from a player like that, who you really expect it from, really hasn't been there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms Saturday morning. Our guest is the sports editor of the Winnipeg Sun. He also covers the Winnipeg Jets. Our good buddy Ted Wyman joins us.
You know, Ted, the Paul Maurice talked about that idea of a rotation, and he said, there's Jordy Benn, there's Ville Heinola, there's Logan Stanley. We were talking about this idea of a team identity. Do you think it's time for him to like continue to play both, like more than one guy a shot? Because you don't have a lot of games. You only have 10 games left. So there's not really a lot of runway here for him to kind of, you know, audition guys. So how do you see this kind of running down the stretch? Paul Maurice, we know, tends to defer to veteran experience over inexperience. But what do you see him doing in terms of that trio, and which one of those guys most likely do you see to kind of get the majority of playing time?
Well, I don't see this as being the time for experimentation, to be honest, guys. It's 10 games away from the playoffs. And I've been sort of beating this horse for a while, even much earlier in the season, saying it's time to really, you know, nail down what these lines are going to be and nail down what these defense pairings are going to be and run with it and make it a consistent thing so that you're ready when the playoffs come. Well, now it's getting awfully close, and now they don't even have the option because there is an injury situation up front. But then you've also got all these D-men, like you said, and how are you working them into the mix? Is Logan Stanley best served by going in and out of the lineup? Is Ville Heinola best served by barely playing at all? Are these defense pairings, other than what we've seen with Pionk and Forbert, that's been pretty consistent. In fact, very consistent all season long. Everybody else has moved around and played with different guys. And, you know, I mean, they're professional hockey players and they're good players, so they can deal with it. But is that the optimum situation? In my opinion, you're going to have to pick a lineup and stick with it as best you can. If there are injuries, so be it. But I don't understand the idea of kind of changing it every night here when you're getting so close to the most important games of the year.
Ted Wyman, our guest. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube, live on all of our social media platforms, talking about the Jets and the Leafs. That goes tonight a little bit after 6 o'clock. And of course, the post game show after the final buzzer back here on our YouTube channel. You know, Ted, ever since the Jets acquired Pierre-Luc Dubois earlier in the year, everyone sort of thought, okay, the Jets go up the middle with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, and then Lowry. It hasn't happened. Not once have the Jets done that. Now, we know that's probably not going to start to happen now with Lowry likely out of the lineup tonight. What's it going to take, or is it just not even a topic worth considering anymore, the idea of Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny? Like, it seems like that was a no-brainer. Yet Paul Maurice hasn't gone to it once this year.
Well, I don't think it's going to happen. And I think the reason is that Nate Thompson is an important part of this hockey team and kind of your prototypical fourth line center. And it seems to me that that's a player that they really want to have in the lineup. He's a very good penalty killer. he's a veteran, obviously a really good guy in the room. And, you know, I guess I'm not suggesting that this team hinges on having Nate Thompson in the lineup. Obviously, I'm not, but I think Paul Maurice really likes him and likes having that veteran presence. He and Lewis and Matthew Perreault have certainly been a very good fourth line, one of the best fourth lines we've seen in Winnipeg for a long time. And would it be any different if you had Lowry there on the fourth line and Stastny up the middle? Well, probably not. But again, I really doubt that a change like that is in the offing. So we're seeing either Stastny or Dubois play on the wing most of the time. And it seems like that's been okay. I think Stastny certainly is a professional, you know, to the nth degree. And he's gone over and played left wing and done a pretty good job with it. But are they fully utilizing the fact that they have such great center depth? Well, I'm not so sure about that.
Right. So to that point, sorry, you know, Lowry, let, you know, not going to play tonight. Let's assume he's not going to play tonight. Doesn't it make more sense to put Stastny in that spot or Dubois or whomever rather than Andrew Copp, who I don't believe has played a game at center all year? And the Jets have basically labeled him as a winger, you know, from his start here in Winnipeg. It just seems odd to me that the Lowry injury and you, the, your decision is to move Copp into the middle rather than one of the actual bona fide centermen you have on in your on your roster.
Yeah, it's just a matter of what your top six is going to look like. But we all know that Copp can move up and play left wing on any of those lines. And look at the points the guy's put up this year. I mean, he's a legit scoring player this year. So it doesn't seem to be a fluke because it's continued all season long.
Mm-hmm.
But he also is a good center. And I think he likes playing center and wants to play center and very understanding of his responsibilities as a checking center. And that might be a little bit different with a Stastny or a Dubois. In fact, we know it is. So you'd have to think that that would be part of the thinking. If you are going to use Copp in that center role, he's just, he knows it, right? He's been there and he can, I think it maybe gives you the least amount of transition from one spot to the other.
Exactly. I agree with that, Ted, because you obviously have the familiarity with Copp, Appleton and Perreault on the third line. I wanted to go back to Pierre-Luc Dubois. And I agree. I think he's definitely one of those players for the Jets that that has to step up. But I wanted to go back to the trade because it seems like it was so long ago, you know, but it was less than 3 months ago, if my math is correct. And, you know, we're obviously going to be talking about this trade, Ted, for probably 10 years, right? Like it's going to be the Evander Kane trade, even though I think most people would agree the Jets won that trade. But how surprised are you with how badly it has gone for both Laine and Roslovic? Obviously, Roslovic was on fire, you know, when he first started playing for the Blue Jackets, but, you know, both players have been healthy scratched. The Blue Jackets are one of the most disappointing teams in the league. I think you'd agree. They're not going to make the playoffs. Most likely, Torts is gone. But what have you just made of this trade overall? Because I think you could agree that maybe with the exception of Roslovic, two of these three players have been disappointing.
When I used to play fantasy baseball, excuse me, guys. When I used to play fantasy baseball, there was a few guys in the league that would always joke that it's only a trade if it's bad for everybody. So, there, you know, it hasn't worked out very well for anyone, not at least the way that it was expected. You know, like, hey, man, like, I've always had these high expectations for Patrick Laine. We saw him, what he could do early on in his career. We saw him score 44 goals. We saw a kind of dominance, a five-goal game, you know, a kind of scoring dominance that there are very, very few players in professional hockey that have that kind of dominance. And you kind of just thought it was going to get bigger and better. And I think people were envisioning 60-goal seasons. And then now where is he? You know, no confidence other than that one unbelievable goal. I mean, that goal was just ridiculous, and that's how Patrick Laine is. He's he can do that, right? He has that skill set, but it's one in 30 rushes that work that way for him, unfortunately. So I am surprised. I really am, and I'm surprised at how hard it's been for Dubois to fit in here in Winnipeg and to find his game. There's flashes there. There's bits and pieces. There's size. There's so much about him that is that looks fantastic. Like, you think you're getting a great player, and you probably are somewhere down the road, but he's not providing that great player performance right now. So, yeah, and Rossovic, like you said, what a great start he had there in Columbus. But, you know, I mean, we saw Jack here in Winnipeg. We know that he has maybe more potential than he's been able to live up to so far, and really didn't show it that much when he was in Winnipeg.
We're listening, you're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel Saturday morning, about 20 minutes before the top of the hour. Ted Wyman of the Winnipeg Sun is our guest as we talk about the Winnipeg Jets.
No, we're not just talking about the Winnipeg Jets with Teddy. We're talking about the Manitoba Moose, because he just recently wrote a big article on Jets. Well, I guess it's also a Jets 2020 first rounder, Cole Perfetti. OHL season got canceled. Teddy, and you had an opportunity to catch up with Cole Perfetti. So what did you come away with from that experience?
Well, first of all, it's pretty cool when you go on a Moose Zoom call and you're the only guy on it and you get to do a one-on-one interview. So that was pretty good. Dave, I think, was driving or something. So
yeah, I had to pull over. It was happening literally as I was in the car. You and I were texting back and forth. I got on. I talked to Nelson Doge for a little bit, but it was a little bit broken up because I'm trying to do a Zoom interview on the side of a road. So I had to get off because it wasn't really working.
I have done those kind of interviews, not over Zoom, but just those ones where you have to pull over to talk to somebody and do a recording. But yeah, you know what, Cole Perfetti, you've had a chance, obviously, to talk to him, Dave. And, you know, he's really an interesting guy, and he's very smart, especially for his age, and very well-spoken. And I really wanted to touch base with him on the OHL season being canceled, because he should be in the OHL right now. I mean, by all standards of hockey and his development, that's where he should be and would be. And he'd be putting up 100-plus points this season in a normal year. And they were going to try to have a shortened season in the OHL, which he would have had to go back for, because he's, you know, he's not really eligible to even be playing in the AHL under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was obviously very upset, especially for overage players in the OHL who are never going to get a chance to get that season back, and for guys who are in their draft years who are trying to impress somebody and haven't even had that opportunity to do so. I think that's really a difficult situation for so many guys, and he's heartbroken for them, you know, for his friends and for his colleagues and for his age cohorts. And then when then it's not been a terrible situation for him at all, because here he is playing in the American Hockey League with men as old as 9 years older than him on the Moose, and he's learning an immense amount about this pro game. And he's, in his own opinion, his development has come a very long way since the beginning of the season, and he feels a lot more comfortable in all zones. He really wants to be a 200-foot player, and he feels like that's what he's working on right now and getting better at. And that's nothing but good news for the Winnipeg Jets, right? I mean, it's taken Mark Scheifele an awfully long time to get to that point, and even now there's still people that question whether he's that great 200-foot player, right? Like, he is a very, very good one. He's obviously excellent offensively, but sometimes he still has his struggles defensively. And so the sooner that a guy is building on that and learning that part of the game and at a pro level, the better for this organization. And I think that Cole Perfetti is benefiting, and he's handling it extremely well. And again, there, talk about nice goals. He went out that night after talking to him and scored an end-to-end rush beauty. And, you know, if you're a Jets fan looking forward to the future, that's one to keep an eye on, because, you know, he looks like he's going to be a really, really strong player for them down the road here.
That certainly was a beautiful goal by Cole Perfetti earlier this week. Ted Wyman, last question for you. Connor Hellebuck came out yesterday after practice and said basically, I don't agree with being pulled. I didn't think I had my A-plus material, but I thought the pull came too quickly. I'm paraphrasing. We're used to Hellebuck being honest and being nothing but effusive in praise for his own game. Were you surprised at his comments yesterday, talking about being pulled by Paul Maurice?
No, not surprised. That's classic Connor Hellebuck. I still remember the beginning of the 2019-20 season. I was in New York, and I'm covering that team as they lose 5-4, 6-4 to the Rangers. And the five goals were garbage against Hellebuck, and the Jets outplayed them all night and they lost. And he said, I like my game. and adamantly liked his game. And everybody was like, you know, what is he talking about? But then he went out and won the Vezina Trophy that year. Let's not forget that. That's a pretty important point and all that. But that's him, right? And here he is again. Come on. 3 goals on 6 shots, and some of those were not good goals. I mean, yeah, it's Austin Matthews. But from that shooting position, how often do players score in the National Hockey League right now in that situation? And certainly on Connor Hellebuyck, it doesn't happen very often. So he didn't have his best stuff at all. And I think Paul Maurice actually made the right move, because it actually did help the Jets kind of stay in that game. I thought Brossoit played pretty well. So sometimes you just have to do it from a coach's standpoint. You just have to do something to shake it up when it's not going so well. And clearly I didn't think Hellebuyck had his best stuff. Now, the one thing for the Jets that's great news is, how often does he not have his best stuff 2 games in a row? Not very often. So you would expect Connor Hellebuyck to be coming out tonight and having a Vezina-worthy performance. And to be totally honest, the Jets really need it from him, because so many of their games lately have been about goaltending. And sometimes it's been the poor goaltending of the other team. Sometimes it's been the great goaltending of their team. And in this last case, the poor goaltending of Hellebuyck was really the story of that game, because it would have been a much, much different result, in my opinion, had the Jets not, you know, found themselves in a 2-0 hole 30 seconds into the game or whatever it was.
The Jets and the Leafs puck drop tonight will be a little bit past 6 p.m. The Winnipeg Sun will have complete coverage of tonight's contest. Ted Wyman is the sports editor for the Winnipeg Sun. He's a good friend of us here with Illegal Curve. Ted, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Great to be here, guys. Have a great show.
Likewise, Ted. Take care. All the best. Thanks, Ted. There he goes. Ted Wyman joining us here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's pay some bills when we come back. More Jets talk. We talk about the lineup for tonight's game, likely with Adam Lowry being out. We'll talk more about Hellebuyck and his comments. Much more to come. Much more Jets talk to come. The comments are flying fast and furious. Come join the chat. You're watching, you're chatting, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Saturday morning, we're back with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So the Jets are taking an optional skate this morning. As we find out more information from the Jets game day skate, we'll bring it to you live here on the program, but no news so far regarding the status of Adam Lowry for tonight's contest. He wasn't out on the ice for the optional. I would suggest it, as he said in the first segment, quite doubtful that he'll play tonight, having taken that hit from Alex Galchenyuk on Thursday. Guys, from my perspective, I don't understand why it's Andrew Kopp who moves into the middle tonight. I mean, I would try. This seems
He is a natural center, though.
He played
center in college. He played center for the Moose.
I get that.
You're a natural host, Drew.
He's not a fish out of water.
I would just say, and like, you know, on that third line, he's fine as a third line center. I don't actually have a problem with that.
It's not that I have a problem with it, because I have no doubts that he is a centerman and can perform the role. You look at the roster and you have Scheifele, Dubois, and Stastny sitting there in your top six. Why not take this opportunity? You know, it's unfortunate, of course, that Adam Lowry is out of the lineup. Why not try and run those three centermen up the middle with Nate Thompson as your fourth centerman? And you shuffle some other things around, and Kopp has played top six wing for this team many times this year. I just don't know why you don't sort of try it out right now, take advantage of that, of the unfortunate injury to Adam Lowry, especially in tonight's contest.
Yeah, I got to agree with Drew. Dave, you know, I hate to agree with Drew, but I mean, and Dave is right, of course, though. I mean, Kopp is a natural center.
Yeah, he can play center, Ted, no question.
Yeah, yeah. So Ted Wyman mentioned, I mean, the reasoning is he was right. I mean, it's because that requires the least amount of tinkering in your lineup, right? Because, you know, Kopp stays on the same line. Perreault comes up. We know Perreault has played a lot on the third line over the years, and then Jansen Harkins, Dave, slots right in on the wing with Nate Thompson and Trevor Lewis. So it's the most logical and easy thing to do. And back to your point, Drew, yeah, like if you're going to run with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry in the playoffs, which is very similar to what they did in 2018 when you had Scheifele, Stastny, Lowry, and Brian Little, who was your third line center, you had the most success. So I'm with you. And obviously, you know, Ted Wyman mentioned this. Paul Maurice is hesitant to move Nate Thompson out of that 4C hole, right? Because, you know, Lowry would move down. I'm talking about if Lowry's in the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying, Drew, is even with Lowry in the lineup, even without Lowry in the lineup, you're not doing that. So it's surprising. It really is, because look, if anybody is saying that they didn't think that was going to be the Jets center depth when that trade occurred and when Stastny was acquired in the offseason, they're lying. I'm sorry. When Dubois was acquired for Lyon and Roslovic, you thought, okay, Dubois is your second line center. Obviously, Scheifele's number one. You know, you have Stastny number three, and then you've got Lowry. But you know, it looks like it's not going to happen. Now let's wait and see. 10 games is not a lot, but we'll see what happens. You know, especially if Lowry remains out of the lineup. I wouldn't be shocked if you see Stastny play a little bit of center, because of course Stastny has played a bit of center, but it hasn't been a lot this year on this Jets team. So you're not going to get any arguments from me, Drew. Like, I think why not use your center depth to the best of your ability, right? You want to maximize the talent on your team.
Look, and you don't know how long Adam Lowry
isn't.
You don't know how long Lowry is going to be out of the lineup. And hopefully from the Jets' perspective, it's a short-term absence. But I just think that, you have this opportunity with the injury where you can try and experiment to see what you have with Scheifele, Dubois, Stastny going 1-2-3 up the middle. It just, to me, doesn't seem like it seems like a missed opportunity by Jets head coach Paul Maurice, Dave, despite the fact that Kopp has experience at the center ice position.
Yeah, but I mean, sure, you can lament it, I guess, but at the end of the day, he's the one who has to live with those decisions and make those decisions. So, I mean, like, look what he used in practice yesterday, right? You had Kopp with Perreault and Appleton. You had Stastny with Dubois and Ehlers. So he's obviously going to roll with that. And you can say, why doesn't he do it? But, I mean, why doesn't he play Ville Heinola? Why doesn't he play Logan Stanley? You know, why does he insist on having Tucker Pullman as a first pairing defenseman? There's lots of questions that sometimes you're a little bit mystified as to why he does. And and sometimes it puts his team into a position that's less than ideal. And we're, you know, I mean, look, and the reality is this, everybody's entitled to their opinion. It doesn't make them right. Right. But you're allowed to have an opinion. That's what I, you know, I'm just saying that it's one thing. Sometimes people are very emphatic and passionate, and I get it. But at the same time, you don't know that whatever you're saying is right. You're speculating. It's conjecture. You can say, well, this is what I think would look ideal for this team. And you're, again, like I said, and that applies to us. That applies to people in the chat. That applies to anyone, really. And so, again, my opinion, Andrew Kopp can slot in anywhere. He's that versatile a player. He's that Swiss Army knife guy who can, if you need him to play on the wing, then he'll play on the wing and he'll do fine. He's responsible. And if you want him to play center, then you know what? He'll play center. And I think it's incumbent on Paul Maurice to really give these guys, again, you don't want to see 3-minute shifts. And obviously I'm being, you know, it's a bit of hyperbole for me, but you don't want to see these guys overreaching. You really need to see this team have balance. And I think that is the key down the stretch, is to really show some balance, because look, Perreault, Kopp, and Appleton can look really, I mean, that potentially has some possibility to do some damage. That's a good third line. That's an effective third line. That's a third line that can score goals for you and to be defensively responsible. So again, it's not a function of like not liking Kopp as a third line center. I'm fine with it. I like I said, I think he's versatile enough to play anywhere the Jets need him to. I just think you have to give him that opportunity. And so, the truth is right now, I was just gonna say quickly, as the reality is this, you know, we'll see what happens with Adam Lowry. We should be finding out fairly soon. I would imagine Jets are probably doing media availability starting now, because it was an optional skate this morning at the at downtown arena. So we will we'll certainly see
an very unnamed soon. Corporate arena.
No, I don't really care. Whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. But the point is that
Bell MTS Place.
Yeah, there you go. So it's not Voldemort. We can say the name. Oh, I guess I just said Voldemort. But the point is, I think this is a situation where, you know, I don't know that you're going to lose a lot by having Andrew Kopp. I think whether he's your second line winger or your third line center, I think you're getting a good player in either spot. And I think, I don't know that, again, like I said, I'm fine with having Stasny. Stasny in the latter part of his career, he's a smart player. Maybe he's better suited to being that third line center, and having Kopp with a little bit more production, we'll see. But I don't know. I mean, again, like I said, we'll see very soon what the Jets are going to do at warm up skate, I guess, at 5:30.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you would quick agree, guys. Yeah, well, I think, you know, you would agree that it's not so much tonight's game that's important. I think it's, you know, what happens in these next 10 games, Dave, and what happens going into the playoffs, right? Because, I mean, you look at the Oilers' center depth, and obviously when they have Dreisaitl and McDavid split up and they're both playing center as opposed to on the same line, which we've seen just recently, right? You're top heavy, but the Jets' center depth is much better than the Oilers. And the reason why I'm comparing them to the Oilers, not the Leafs, is because, of course, they might play the Oilers. They probably will play the Oilers in the first round. And so I think, to your point, Drew, when you have Paul Stastny, you know, able to be on the third line, and you have Adam Lowry as your fourth line center, I think you can really maximize your center depth. And that's a, you know, competitive advantage over the Oilers.
And exactly. And before we get to talking more about the Oilers, who are in town to play the Jets Monday and Wednesday of next week, we're pleased to talk more about the Toronto Maple Leafs with David Alter, who covers the Leafs for the Hockey News, a good friend of the program. David, nice to see you. How are you doing, buddy?
Hey, good to see you guys. This is my first time in this iteration of the show. You guys are looking great.
Well, I think you might need to get your vision checked, but that's a separate issue altogether there, David. But we appreciate the compliment and we'll say thank you very much nonetheless. Obviously, David, Thursday night was a bit of a heated contest between the Jets and the Leafs. And I think we'd expect very similar tonight. A lot of physicality, a lot of maybe some post-game emotions were running high even yesterday with the media availabilities, the back and forth about the Leafs being dirty or the Leafs being physical. You know, from your perspective, a guy who watches the Leafs night in and night out, has the word dirty ever crossed your mind as it pertains to the Toronto Maple Leafs?
I can't say it has. And I think Wayne Simmonds kind of summed it up best, because I was a little bit surprised. I mean, I didn't tune into the Jets availability. So when I saw that was the theme, I was kind of a bit surprised. That game between both teams was pretty chippy. And the one thing I've noticed with the Leafs and a big complaint has kind of been officiating. They seem to get a lot of missed calls against them. And I think maybe that's kind of boiling over and kind of compounding for the Leafs, that maybe they felt that they should be a little bit more aggressive in that game. And that surprised me a little bit. But in terms of dirty, I don't think so. If anything, the big criticism we hear from the Leafs is when one of their players get hurt, that there isn't enough of a physical response from the rest of the teammates. So it did surprise me a bit. But these two teams are battling for a lot right now. And so I'm not surprised that tensions are flaring up a little bit as we get to the crunch time of the season, really.
Dave, what did you think of Nick Foligno's debut? Obviously, you know, the Leafs won the game, but, you know, we were talking about it, you know, after the trade deadline, and, you know, Drew's opinion was they maybe gave up a little bit too much to acquire Foligno, but obviously he's playing.
No, maybe in my mind. They gave up too much.
No, maybe. Yeah. And, you know, I guess, you know, if the Leafs go far in the playoffs, then you can maybe say, you know, it was worth it. But do you expect Foligno to stick on Austin Matthews' line? And how do you see him being used? What did you think of the trade overall? And obviously, you know, as I mentioned before, his first game as a member of the hometown Leafs.
I think he very well could stick on that line. If anything, he's not going to fall below the top two lines. He'll either be the left wing of that line or with Tavares and Nylander. And those are both skilled lines where Foligno fits perfectly. And I thought he did a good job, all things considered. You go through a quarantine. They didn't really have a full practice. He kind of had some ice to himself when he got to Winnipeg and then joined the team for with this compressed schedule. What the Leafs have been doing is using morning skates as pseudo practices if they didn't practice the day before. And that was where Foligno really kind of got a sense of his line mates. But I thought he fit in great. I think the fact that he's super enthusiastic about being a Maple Leaf is something that's very welcome to the team. Obviously his father was part of the 93 run here. And the fact that he went down and made a speech about what it means to him, I think can rub off as part of the leadership dynamic that they're trying to bring to the younger players, like they did with Thornton and Simmons and Bogosian as well, with all those players who are veterans who are passionate about the game. And I thought he fit in pretty well. He didn't look out of place. I think he'll only get better in that spot. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him on the power play with more reps. I was kind of surprised it didn't happen in the first game, but I thought maybe because there wasn't a practice, they didn't want to put in too much too quickly. So they had him on the PK in that spot. And I think he looked great with Marner on the PK as well. And as far as giving up too much on the surface, I think that's fair. I think Taylor Hall agrees with you because I still think that the reason he wore 71 was a troll to that. Because I don't see any other reason why he wore 71. And I don't know if anyone's asked Taylor Hall about why he's wearing 71, because it was such a out of left field number for him to wear with the Bruins. But anyway, I think when you look at it, the Leafs are really about what they're going to be like for the next few years. That first round pick is probably not going to service them much because they have so many prospects. And the fact that they had to ask two different teams to reduce the salary to fit him in also plays a role into that. So I think that had a lot to do with why the return was so high. But for what the Leafs needed, I think he fit better for what the Leafs needed as opposed to someone like Taylor Hall, who only got a second round pick with Boston.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. The Jets and the Maple Leafs, the second of the two-game series, goes later on tonight. David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the Hockey News. He joins us now on the program.
You know, David, the Leafs acquired Big Save Dave at the trade deadline, and one of the, you know, Jack Campbell was on that unbelievable run, and everybody was talking about him, hit a bit of a stumbling block. And it looked like we were going to see some fire wagon hockey here on Thursday based on that, the first 5 minutes of that game. But do you think he's kind of solidified his spot? Do you think like that's going to be the way they're going to run? Or do you think they're still planning on seeing what happens with Frederik Andersen and getting him back into the lineup?
I still think the plan is to try and get Frederik Andersen back at some point. In Vancouver, he was starting to take part in the tail end of practice sessions with the Leafs. He hasn't been part of a full practice yet, but Frederik Andersen's situation has been a little bit bizarre because he went from playing to nowhere in sight. And then the Leafs used his cap exception to add those players like Foligno and a bunch of others and like Riddick. And look, the thing with Campbell is he's been good, but he doesn't have the track record yet that the Leafs can really put all their chips behind him. That's why they got someone like Riddick, and they're still hoping that someone like Anderson can be ready, because they still respect his game a lot, and they do feel that a healthy Frederik Anderson is the way to go in that respect. So it's tricky. I think the Leafs are masters when it comes to knowing what they can and can't do with the salary cap. And I think with the situation that presented themselves, bringing in someone like Big Save Dave made a lot of sense for how little he counted against the cap. But I think you saw in his performance in that second game against the Canucks that goaltending depth is incredibly important. And the goalies can be a little bit streaky, and they need some stability there. And I still think Frederik Anderson is a part of that. Jack Campbell had a good response game, but I still think we need to see a lot more games from Campbell on a consistent basis to really know what he is going forward.
Come playoff time, David, goaltending matters even more than the regular season. Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuck. Montreal, Carey Price, assuming he's back from his concussion in time for the playoffs. You know, in Edmonton, Mike Smith has been outstanding this year. In Toronto, it's obviously the biggest question. Why will goaltending succeed come this playoff time for the Leafs when it has cost them and failed them so many years previous, with Freddie Anderson as the goalie of record?
You know, if I'm going to tell you why it will succeed, I think it's depth is the secondary reason. And one, it could be a fully healthy, rested Frederik Anderson. He admitted that he was playing hurt, and I think he has a lot to prove. I don't think he's going to try to force things, but I think he's definitely a man on the mission trying to have a big year in a contract year and show that his regular season performance wasn't indicative of what he can provide to other teams or even the Maple Leafs if he chooses to go that route. So I think that's why it will succeed. Why it won't succeed, I mean, it's been tricky. The Leafs goaltending situation with Anderson over the last few years, there have been a couple of bad goal scenarios, and there hasn't been a goaltending performance, that has stolen games. What we've seen in playoffs is goalies rise to be the hero at times, and when it looks like the team is down and out, a goaltender comes in and really defies all the analytics and metrics and really steals one out and changes the momentum. It's one of those things where the analytics tell a lot of the story, but in the playoffs, when things are decided in such moments, it can be thrown out the window at times. And so that's really going to be the measure of what the Leafs are in the playoffs, is if that goaltending can steal games, because there's going to be situations where they're behind and they need a dominant goaltending performance to kind of get them through. So we'll see if they can get that. It's not really been the measure of the Leafs playoff success over the last, I don't know how many years.
Yeah, I think it's some good points that you make there, Dave, because I think we would all agree that the goaltending depth is as good as it's been in a long time by bringing in Big Save Dave. But I also think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. As you mentioned, Freddie Anderson's healthy, and you know, if he's playing well, you've had Jack Campbell, who has been just so good with the exception of a few games maybe. So I think, you know, if they do have to turn to Jack Campbell, you know, that's obviously not going to be a bad thing because he's been so solid all year long. But I wanted to ask you about Austin Matthews. And, you know, obviously, you know, we've talked a lot about Matthews over the years, first overall pick, you know, Lion A going second overall. But, you know, watching him, you know, throughout this season, not just against the Jets, and he obviously scored a nice goal the other night against the Jets to open up the scoring, even though, you know, some people thought Hellebuck maybe should have had that one. But it's easy to say, you know, for us, not going up against a guy who has 34 goals. But I wanted to ask you, like, do you think he's being overshadowed a little bit? And I realize, you know, some people in the chat are going to go absolutely nuts on me here, Dave, but with the way Connor McDavid is playing, do you think his season is being overshadowed a little bit? Because you look at on a goals per game basis, Austin
Not
Matthews.
Just people in the chat. I'm going to go nuts on you too for even asking the question.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, guys. Connor McDavid is going to win the Hart Trophy. If he doesn't, I think, you know, everyone should have their heads examined who's voting for that award. But, you know, Austin Matthews has a really good chance to hit 40 goals in a 56-game season. Like, I guess, you know, I just feel like, you know, sometimes we're not talking enough about how good Matthews has been this year.
Yeah, he's taken it to another level. It's that thing where when you have elite players, they say that fifth year in the league is the year they really start to play at their max potential. Like they've reached that pinnacle and they're going to carry it forward that way. And the goals Austin Matthews was scoring were unbelievable. Like the precision of his shot, where he was getting these goals, the dangles around to just confuse goaltenders, the positions that he's found himself in. And the one thing that hasn't really been talked about a lot this year compared to other years is his 200-foot game. Like he really is on all sides of the puck, being that prototypical elite center that you can rely on in that spot. And so I think that's probably what gets people kind of crazy and talking a lot about Matthews. I'm sure it's the Toronto bias too. Anything that happens in Toronto gets talked about a lot. We understand. We accept that Connor McDavid's not going to get maybe as much talk, but I think he does elevate that profile 10 times over in Edmonton. And what Connor McDavid's been able to do throughout his entire career has been amazing. The other thing too is a lot gets talked about those two guys specifically because we're in this North Division. And it was the first time where we found out that they trained together in the offseason and kind of shared trade secrets to some degree and still haven't quite figured out each other as a player to scout against. So that's kind of added to that dynamic of Matthews versus McDavid as well that we haven't really had in previous years. So I think you're right. I think McDavid is the number one for the Hart right now. But Matthews has also been playing on an injured wrist and it's kept him out of games. And he's managed to do what he's done while managing an injury as well, which, I mean, you could say rightly or wrongly, he's sharing that like it's a thing. So I think it just kind of speaks to the different level. I think Matthews has taken perhaps the biggest jump from year 4 to year 5 that anyone's seen, where we're almost at this McDavid echelon right now. We almost expect it from him. And that's not this diminishing what McDavid's done, but it's actually the opposite, where we just expect greatness and the ridiculousness of what he can do to opponents across the league, that it's not as eye-opening or jarring as maybe what Matthews has done this year from year 4 to year 5. So I think that's where a lot of that comes into play as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a bright and sunny Saturday morning. I am your host, Drew Mandel, joined by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the Hockey News. He's our guest on the program discussing the Leafs ahead of the Jets and the Leafs. The rematch goes later on tonight.
Well, Dave, you know, we've talked about the Leafs in the playoffs, and we know how important it is for this team to advance and make some noise really this year, especially considering the moves they've made. But because given the nature of this season and its unprecedented nature, does that remove an element of the pressure on guys like Kyle Dubas and Sheldon Keefe because of that? Or is the pressure because they went all in and because they made these big moves to be a challenger, if they don't have success outside of this North Division, is there still going to be some sort of repercussions?
I think the pressure has never been higher on Dubas and management for the reasons that, listen, the Leafs have always been able to kind of not rest on their laurels, but kind of say, look, I mean, we always had Boston and we always had to deal with in our division. And that's always been who we've matched up with in the opening round. And that's, sorry, my dog is, my dog doesn't like when I don't give her attention.
What kind of dog?
It's a husky.
Oh my,
she'll eventually make herself present. but for now she's
she's growling.
Yeah, she's just playing. She knows if I'm giving attention that's not on her. Like if I wasn't on this right now, she'd be fine, but she knows that my attention is directed. Anyway, what I was saying is the pressure has never been
Dave, does your dog think the Leafs are a dirty team?
She has a lot of opinions. But the pressure's never been hotter because the Leafs have just never been in a situation where they've had opponents that have historically finished below them in the standings the last few years. Mm-hmm. That's not to diminish the other Canadian teams, but you look at it and a lot of people on paper going into this season kind of said there's no reason for the Leafs to not finish as the winners in this division going into the Final Four. That might be presumptuous you probably could look at it. One of the things that I looked at from an elementary stats standpoint was the fact that Frederik Anderson's career stats against Canadian opponents going into the season was something like 52-15. Like, it was something so basic that I looked at. It's like, okay, well, I mean, historically and how these Canadian teams are, they aren't that much different than previous years. The Leafs are the heavy favorites, and there really isn't a reason why that they shouldn't kind of take this division. And the moves that they made and the trades that they've made kind of set themselves up that they really have no excuses that left that they maybe have had in previous years. So I think the pressure has been really hot for the Leafs to do something this year. Not to say that there'll be a fire sale if they go out in the first round again, because they do have a lot of pieces that are set up. But you look at the one-year-only acquisitions that they've had to make because of the salary cap, the message has been pretty clear that this is the year that they have to make, that they have to do some damage. And I think anything short of a Final Four appearance will be a major disappointment for the Leafs and the management team.
Dave, last question for you. And you, before you leave, though, you do have to show your husky on the screen. Yeah, the people are demanding that. Last question for you. You know, our old friend Zach Bogosian, he's out of the Leafs lineup for the next month or so. How significant of a loss is it to the Leafs blue line?
I was looking at some of the numbers. It's significant. I don't know how big it is. He's really good on the PK in terms of zone denial entries and doing those kind of things that help the Leafs have a pretty decent penalty kill. From a third pair standpoint, that matchup wasn't getting huge competition. I think Dermott's been pretty good in that. I think the biggest loss would have been if he was out earlier in the year, because I think someone like Bogosian's kind of helped Travis Dermott take a big step forward in his game. And so I think now that Travis Dermott's kind of progressed, I think he can kind of take the reins and help someone like Rasmus Sandin, who's going to play in that spot. I think Ben Hutton might get a look or two. He was also one of those players they acquired at the deadline for depth. And that's pretty much in that spot. I do think that on a PK, you might see some of the loss there. But apart from that, I think his positive effect has already been reached to the younger players that he was playing with early on, where I think if this was earlier in the season, it would probably be perhaps more devastating. The biggest positive for the Leafs is the decor has been really healthy, and this is the first long-term injury to any defenseman on the Leafs, which I know with Winnipeg you can't really say, but it's been one of those things. And let me see if I can get the dog. She's now, when she wants to be the show piece, she's being dead weight. Hey.
How big is she?
60 pounds.
Oh, there we go.
Oh, there we go. That's a good dog.
Beauty.
Yeah, she's got the blue eyes. So she's very talkative, and she knew that the moment I started giving someone else attention, she was going to talk and chime in. So, like, this, well, look at this, like, nonstop.
A few weeks ago, we had Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press on, and he did the interview with his bird sitting on his shoulder.
Wow.
We're not going to ask you to put your husky on your shoulder, but nonetheless, this show has obviously gone to the dogs, and we appreciate it, because more dogs rather than less us.
David, before we let you go, I've been trying to figure out what hat that is. I love the Canadian flag there, but I couldn't tell what the hat was. Oh, yeah.
So it's an Oakley hat.
Oakley, yeah.
It's Oakley, okay.
In terms of gear. And so they made this hat. They had two versions of it. This is the second version, where it's like a matte O finish with the leaf there. With the flag, and then the brim's got the flag too.
Nice.
Yeah, so, love it.
So not having a super fantastic hair day, so I decided to put on a hat. Usually I don't wear a hat for these things.
That's okay. Dave Drew isn't either, so.
Yeah, that's true. It's
I kind of worried the moment I said something about hair that someone was going to make a...
I woke up like this. Last night I had a full head of hair, and then all of a sudden I woke up this morning and it was all gone.
Yeah.
David Alter covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the Hockey News. He's a good friend of the program. David, appreciate your time. Enjoy tonight's contest. We'll do it again real soon.
Thanks for having me on, and I'm enjoying the new format. I appreciate it. appreciate it.
Take care, David. Thanks so much. There he goes, David Alter of the Hockey News. And to be perfectly honest, you know, the growling you heard, that wasn't actually David's dog. That was Ezzy's stomach. You could pick it up on the mic. You know, we just wanted to blame the dog for that.
I was trying to figure out like what you feed a dog like that. Like my sister has a Shepherd Husky cross, and I don't think it's that big, but it's probably about 50 pounds. So I imagine, you know, that dog probably eats a lot of beefarino.
And on that note, let's pay some bills. When we come back, an update from Winnipeg Jets morning skate, tell you about some lineup changes that we've seen so far. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.